Good morning. I'd just like to thank the APHA and Orion and CDC for providing this opportunity for us to share. I kind of feel like the new guy on the block, and you'll see that as why in a second here. So, there we go. I don't have anything to disclose. And so we've approached this, I guess by now it's obvious that why we're here is to share our journey or our story out way out in Washington State, which definitely seems to be a little outside of what we would normally think as the endemic areas previously described. So we've approached this in what we would say would be a One Health approach, looking at all the aspects, the environmental, animal, and human data as we have approached trying to define this organism in our state. And so traditionally, it's been present, as you can see, as we've already noted, southwestern United States. There we go. Anyway. And now, of course, we're on the map, and of course, coming with that being on the map, we've had to scramble to define all the case definitions and report forms and investigation and all that. And so, indeed, we have done that. If I could just hit the right thing. By the way, I wanted to share these. This is not our claim to glory, but this is from Washington State. We do actually have dust storms there. I'm not going to try to pronounce that because last time I used this slide, I had someone from the audience correct me on how to pronounce it. And so dust storm works fine. Now, we have more than just rain in Washington, okay? So if you've never been there and you've heard stories, we have a lot of rain going on right now on the west side of the state. South Central, during most seasons, is very, very dry and very arid, and so we do have storms. So our journey started back in 2010, about June of 2010 through May 2011. Healthcare providers identified three cases, very closely grouped. Actually, residence was in three counties. Exposure was likely for two to be in one county. So they were definitely clustered together, and that definitely got people's attention because of historically, no travel history, et cetera. And of course, we feel like we've got the environment that could potentially contribute to its successful and becoming endemic in that region. And so the human, the animal cases, we talked to our state animal diagnostic lab, and we went back to the 90s, and we had 30-some cases diagnosed there. All but three were had fairly significant out-of-state travel. But we do believe that we have three, two dogs and a horse, that were actually acquired within Washington that we know of, I guess I would say. And so early on in the process that we had, I mentioned three cases, a 12-year-old who played extensively around this apartment complex in kind of scrub desert type area, lots of activity in the soil. We also had a 15-year-old at the time who was a very avid ATV enthusiast who actually led us to this whole discovery. And then we had a male, older gentleman that was an excavator who actually dug foundations, etc., in three different counties. So we don't know actually where he was exposed, but we think our first two cases were definitely exposed in one county. And now, subsequently, so the green-colored, if you can see those down in that lower part there, our initial county, Benton County, Franklin, and Walla Walla, where the county is a residence. And since then, we've identified four additional cases of residents in what is named Yakima County. So it became notifiable very soon after its discovery, and the investigations tell us that it was endemically acquired. So the first three counties then made it notifiable in 2011. Interesting story, and I don't have time to go into it, but the soil that we collected in 2010 actually wasn't confirmed as positive until later, 2014, and so that was just last year. So we really are just kind of scrambling in our efforts to define this thing and to continue to see how long it's been here and what the prevalence is. So now, of course, we interview to determine whether or not exposure could have occurred in the state, what kind of activity they've had in soil, et etc. We have questions now regarding pets on their on the interview forms. Again, trying to bring into the equation, so to speak, not just the human, but also the animal, and now the environmental. And of course, any human isolates are sent to CDC so that we can get some identification here. If I could hit the right button, I guess that would help. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about our sampling. By the way, it really pays to know your collaborators. And so when they wear masks, it's important to understand that. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody's aware that Orion is a stand-up guy. He gets out there on scene with us in the hot desert. Sorry about that. All right, so our whole genome sequencing then of the isolates that we've obtained so far actually show a very nice clade from Washington, so a number of environmental and human isolates grouped together very well. And in fact, we had two more isolates, human isolates identified last year, and they cluster together with this clade. And it looks as though, by the smaller number of SNPs, that it's likely been around for a while, like some of the veterinary personnel in the state have thought. Likely has actually been out way out north there for a number of years. So as it became reportable, notifiable across the state, 2014, we received notice of 24 cases. 18 of those, of course, were travel associated, but three were identified as locally acquired from, again, our south central counties marked, as you can see there. We receive about 67% of our cases are reported by laboratories, of course. Now we've had a total of 9 human cases that have been confirmed as being endemically acquired, which I know those are small numbers compared to Arizona and California, but hey, we got to start somewhere, right? And it's likely, that, of course, that it's very underreported, and the fact that it's been there a long time, our hope is, of course, at some point to do skin testing and get a better feel for just how much the population has been affected. So our environmental surveillance, certainly has been targeted towards case investigations. We've done quite a lot of that, as I'll show you a second here. And we've actually now have what we feel, and I'm qualifying this, I'm going to say me, I feel there's likely to be an endemic zone, and I'll explain that in a second here, and how we are attempting to develop a habitat suitability modeling as we go with our environmental surveillance. So our findings to date now, as soon as you make a slide, it becomes outdated. And my field investigation teams have been out two or three times in the last 2 weeks now collecting more samples. So these are outdated, actually, but I don't have results on them, so this still stands pretty good. So 195 total samples, 11 sites, 2 counties, which are our index county and the second county, or Yakima County. 177 total negatives to date, 13 positives, and 5 is still being reported as indeterminate based on initial PCR. So we now have, in county number 1, 4 distinct locations that have been positive. They are fairly separated distance-wise. And just to show what we've done so far, we selected these 8 soil variables. Now, obviously, there are other things than just the soil that has an influence on how COXIE does in the environment, including the amount of organic debris, so plant life. Some evidence suggests that rodent activity and the presence of rodents may contribute something to that. And the fact that there's at least 288, if not more, different species of fungus that can actually exist in a desert-type environment. We selected these 8 soil variables, pretty much used in a lot of other research, and we're using the USGS database to assign values to each of these at the location where our ATV enthusiast crashed. And I want to say that it was an unusual presentation. It was a soft tissue infection with COXIE from landing on a rodent burrow, actually. And I'll show a picture of this impact zone in just a second. So the values assigned to those variables, when all 8 are present, now we've taken this and projected it over county number 1, And wherever you see red on the map, this other soil that compares to the, has all eight of those values. Okay, so throughout the county, you can see that, of course, soil changes. And in fact, even in endemic zones, the soil values actually change. Hope that's as clear as dirt. All right. So this actually is our index site, from the indications. I'm just going to say that we believe this to be an endemic zone, albeit a very small one. But we have repeatedly been able to, at that particular point, which is where our ATV crashed and led us to the site, and we sampled the soil and now have grown sea images a number of times, both in isolation in the lab as well as PCR positive. But from that very small location, then we've assigned values. So you can see even within the endemic zone here that all eight values to those eight variables match kind of all through that area. But you can also see adjacent to it and just south, there aren't as many of the same values in the soil. So the soil varies a lot across there. And we're not certain at all yet which variables most support coxie growth. Whether, and we do, based on others' research, probably salinity, pH, and soil type. So we do have sandy loam in this area. Getting to understand that soil is a very wonderful and complex material. I made the mistake of saying dirt when I was talking to a soil scientist, and it struck horror in the look on his face. In my mind, it was almost like somebody playing a Stradivarius, you know what Stradivarius is, and calling it a fiddle. I mean, it just like, so I will never do that again. Excuse me. In addition, then, to our human surveillance and our environmental surveillance, we're also doing some animal surveillance. And so I worked feverishly back a year ago or so to recruit 14 veterinary hospitals from that South Central region to provide very much convenient sampling of serum so that we could have those tested. We use an EIA, Dr. Nancy Chow, CDC, validated an EIA for canine use. To date, out of about 1,200 samples, we've received results on 261. We have about a 3% positivity going right now. We've tried to follow up on those few dogs. Obviously, we're waiting. I know these are very low numbers, but it is interesting that it's kind of in our coxie corridor, if you will, pretty much associated where the human cases are. And again, we're not at all certain where those points of exposure have been yet. So additionally then, we've worked a lot to raise awareness among healthcare providers, including physicians and veterinarians. We actually, I think it was already mentioned, we had the Pacific Northwest Coxie Work Group, which a public health work group, which is really great. We put on our first workshop regionally in that South Central region of our state. We had physician and veterinary speakers. We invited local health as well as physicians and veterinarians from the area. We actually did a media outreach session, and part of that was when we saw our mask man here and others. We actually went out to a site and demonstrated how we do sampling correctly, etc. Very successful. And now we're actually getting some, this many months later, that was in May, actually. And so now we're being pressed by the public who was also invited to some of this. They knew that we were out sampling, and now there's kind of a concerted request that we begin reporting back to them what we're finding in their environment. So we're going to leave that to Orion, or I'm going to. So anyway. In conclusion, then, really have used human, animal, and environmental testing data to not only identify it, but to try to get a handle on what this thing is doing in our state. And we're far from that, but we're having a lot of interest generated and actually fun from a public health standpoint of working on something that hopefully we can do something about. We need to continue to raise awareness amongst our healthcare providers and veterinarians. And, of course, we're going to continue to try to understand and define that ecological niche. And maybe from our habitat suitability, even do some predicting, and then maybe do some risk mapping eventually. Wouldn't that be cool? So, and we have a lot of things that we've discussed ongoing. Our Pacific Northwest COXI work group is really a great think tank. A number of discussions quarterly. We try to meet and share information, etc. And I think that's it. Other than I want to acknowledge all these folks, and I want to thank my mother, which seems odd, but she was for many, many years in public health. She's retired now. She just turned 91. She's sharper than a tack. She's my greatest supporter and my biggest inspiration for going into public health. And in fact, last night, for half an hour, I had a discussion with her on Valley Fever in Washington State. So, thank you. How deep does it grow?
So how deep in the soil is it found? The surface soil?
We're taking surface samples. Sorry, the question was basically how deep can this organism be found in the soil? That's a great question and appreciate that. I'm not sure I'm the one to answer that. But we take core samples down to about 8 inches and we have found it on the surface. Associated with rodent burrows, we've actually found it around on the surface and down in. There's some research out there, older descriptions of this organism that can actually go down to 2 feet or more to survive. And so we didn't have time, but it's a fascinating presentation that we do on just all the things that influence its survival or not. So surface temperature, soil is part of that. You know, with 288 at least other fungal species, there's lots of competition, et cetera. And, of course, rainfall and all that. So, okay, thank you.